like you can spend so much on competitors that we probably do less of like the generic keywords that like other companies would do.
Do you have like a blueprint approach you just put on every single persona?
I don't think it has to be formulaic. Do these three things all the time. You kind of like have to test it with your own personas and like, and also just turn up where they're at. You have to work at all of this stuff and make sure that people are actually interested in it.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the very first English episode of Revenue Marketing Real Talk. Very excited today, and there's a special reason why we do it on English, which is a very special guest today, which is Liam to my right side. First of all, warm welcome, Liam, to our office and our podcast studio. Glad you're here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, maybe to introduce yourself a little bit first, maybe you can talk about just like who you are, where you're coming from, why you're here.
Sure, yeah. I am Liam. I'm VP of Marketing at Cognizm. Cognizm is a B2B data and sales intelligence provider. So some people might be aware of us. We compete with the likes of Zoom Info, or Dilfran, Lucia and Apollo. We love everything that is revenue marketing. Cognizm, big fans of that type of marketing. We adopted it. So yeah, just excited to be here to talk all things revenue marketing with you.
Yeah, cool. That's awesome to hear. And I think cool. That's exciting to hear. And I think Cognizm is quite an interesting journey, right? Or kind of like an outlier company, you could say, in adopting like a demand creation approach quite early on. So I'm very excited also today to dive a little bit deeper into that. But maybe you could start out first by also talking a little bit more about your journey at Cognizm. Like, when did you start? How was the like the big milestones you experienced? Also?
Yeah. So I joined Cognizm just over 4.5 years ago. And when I started, the company was about 50, 60 people. We were 5 million in ARR. I think it was probably within my first week, we did this like little town hall and everyone was celebrating because we were like 5 million in ARR. And it was kind of like a big moment at the time. Now fast forward to where we are now, we're just over 550 people. We're just over 75 million in ARR. The company's really scaled and grown massively with it. So I started in my role as a campaign marketing manager and then moved into the global head of demand generation and then and now VP of marketing. So I've also been able to have like a really good personal growth trajectory with the company as well. We started off sort of like learning as we go with a lot of the marketing we're doing and had a very strong and like robust lead gen like marketing strategy. In fact, I think we're actually pretty good at doing lead gen. Made this switch when we realized that the current sort of lead gen model that we were running wasn't particularly scalable and wasn't going to take us into to that next stage of growth. And then that's kind of when we made that decision after splitting the funnel and looking at all of our metrics that we were going to switch sort of a demand creation, demand capture, revenue marketing model.
Super interesting. So I think making a decision a lot of people want to do but struggle to do it because there's a lot that goes with it, like goal setting, you know, organizational structure. I think we touch on some of the points. I wonder though, since I think it's an adoption, the whole at least marketing, but the organization at large really needs to kind of buy in. Were you skeptical in the beginning? Like, did you need some time to wrap your head around just doing things differently, or how did you experience it yourself?
I was actually really excited about it because I thought there was a lot of creative opportunity outside of lead gen. Like, I kind of got frustrated sometimes with the lead gen model that, you know, you're like limited in the content you could create. Because you have to create stuff that can allow you to have gated assets, which kind of like rules video and lots of stuff out. I'd also been watching loads of stuff, I suppose, on LinkedIn from like Chris Walker and stuff at the time, and I really wanted to try it. there was a bit of anxiety about making it work, mm-hmm. but essentially, Alice, DeCourcy, who's our CMO, we came into it. So just after COVID, we could have one of our first meetings that we possibly could have in person. We all went to this like temporary office because we didn't have an office at the time because we'd sort of lost it over COVID. And we created, and she just put on the board, Project Chris Walker is what we called it. And we decided to start mapping out our way that we were going to basically emulate this sort of like ungated demand creation, demand capture model. So yeah, it was exciting at the time. It was just like nervy to and like to know how to make it work, because I don't think anyone really knew how to do that at the time. Like it mm-hmm. was, it wasn't super clear. So I think there was a lot of learning that you had to sort of do along the way. In fact, all of that is really documented at Gian Alice's book, like A Diary of a CMO, A Diary of a First Time CMO, which we released like last year. And we really document that whole process and that switch in that book. So if people are interested, like it's a book that's definitely worth a read.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I hear that also having like an external advisor like Chris Walker in this mm-hmm. case, really helped also build some confidence in like what are the concrete action steps, like what are the blind spots perhaps mm. also we need to take care of.
Yeah, so to begin with as well, we started trying to do it by ourselves and I struggled to get it to scale, to be honest. We got so far, but there was lots of stuff that we were missing. I think one of the biggest things was to understand one, how to report on it and show that back upwards to senior leadership. And then the other part with it was like how to structure and run our paid social accounts, which I think at the time, you know, we'd got maybe halfway there, but it was a bit messy and we weren't getting the exact results we wanted. And then after we implemented those changes, when we saw that, I think the biggest uptick in that inbound demand, we just saw that the motion actually started working.
What's super interesting to me, though, what you touched on just a little bit, is that the go-to-market motion you're having in the approach to marketing, you consider to be actually a competitive advantage in itself. So not mm-hmm. stemming from the product side solely, but making sure that people actually know all the bits and pieces, all the little things also that differentiate you from a product perspective, from a data perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's super interesting to me. So maybe we can start on how this has been built up, because I think also when we talked priorly, you have a little bit of a different marketing organization structure than what I usually see with clients, mm-hmm. for sure. I think a lot of them still, or a lot of marketing organizations and SaaS still run a model where it's very focused on like generalistic growth managers, mm-hmm. and then maybe you have some CRM specialists, yes, but you have content specialists running like long-form content or long-form content writing, and then maybe some performance marketing specialist at some point, some scale of the organization. But really, I'm super interested at, like, how is your organization set up, mm-hmm. and then what's the why behind every single function?
So I think... So from a structural perspective, the marketing team is sort of split out from CMO at the top. And then we have a product marketing organization where we have within that team who do competitive intelligence and then product marketing managers as well. And the product marketing team are responsible for competitive, that means they're going out and looking at all of creating battle cards and basically researching and keeping the sales team up to date on everything that's going on with our competition, and also helping the marketing team with the relevant information they need, especially like the SEO team and paid team who often do different compete like pages and things like that. And then we have the product marketing managers are then working on obviously positioning, messaging, pricing, packaging, creating assets for launches and releases, and working with demand gen and sales team to keep them up to date and have all the assets that they need to go to market as well. Then we have a paid acquisition team, which kind of sits separate to the demand gen team, which is maybe slightly different to other organizations. And the paid acquisition team run all of our paid accounts, optimizing and reporting on the campaigns running and feeding that back into the demand gen team. And the paid acquisition team basically kind of act like an in-house agency to the rest of the org, because I suppose they're not just working with the demand gen team, they also work with like the customer marketing team too, and the product marketing team as well. And then under myself, then there's demand gen, which is broken out into demand gen managers who own personas each. So they own, like, so we have three core personas, which is marketing, sales, and RevOps. And there's a demand gen manager that owns each of these personas. And they basically end up knowing the persona inside out, and with support from the product marketing team on, like, having customer insights there. And they basically own then the campaigns, the go-to-market campaigns for those personas, specifically also working on ABM activity to some of the target accounts as well, and then all the content for that persona in those ABM campaigns. And then we have demand gen content, what we call demand gen content at Zex, and it's a small team of those, and they also are aligned to a persona each. And they really keep the lights on what we call the media machine, and the media machine being like podcasts. So each persona has a podcast, then we have newsletters, then we have we have different live shows and all of these different assets, and they keep these running and run what we call our easy mode content framework, which basically follows a strategic narrative to get content out and keep the media machine alive. So they're writing content that is specific for the demand gen motion and not for necessarily for SEO purposes, although we do ensure that what they do like tries to rank for specific keywords and stuff, but it's not with like the same strategy behind it for maybe demand capture that the SEO teams work to. We have that for regions like broken out, so we have like that same kind of structure is for like the UK, US as one, and then for France and for Germany. We then have an SEO team who follow what we call like a money keyword strategy, which they're very focused on bottom of funnel keywords. They run a little bit of like traffic play and classic like running clusters, but the majority of it is money keywords, which is really focusing on the intent behind the search and it being bottom of funnel, so that they're bringing in, focusing on keywords that might actually be low volume, high difficulty, or for example, but it will be but it will have like strong intent for a purchase to buy. So for example, super basically, you know, like focusing on like buy B2B data or Zoom info versus Cognizant, and then also doing other sort of competitor campaigns that like what we call like Crash the Party, which is then like Lusher versus Zoom info and focusing on these sell pages. And then we have a customer marketing team who are focused on advocacy, expansion, community, and retention, and all of the campaign and all of the sort of programs that we have about that around that. So that's going in case studies, reviews, expanding accounts, and also retaining our customers and all of the campaigns that we run around that. And then we have what we call marketing enablement, which is our design, video, and website teams, and they all sit together in one function and kind of act then again as an agency to the rest of the business as well.
Interesting.
So yeah, that's kind of it in some all big business. And then the SDR team that sits actually within sales, so that outbound team is separate, and then we have, that's divided into SDRs that do outbound purely to Cognizant's data and the research that the RevOps team pulled together and the data the RevOps team pulled together for target accounts based on account scoring. the scout scoring system they've set up for them to go after. And then we have within that inbound reps who solely focus on the demo requests that come in from the inbound demand model.
And those sit within sales too, though?
They sit within sales too, which means that we have, that's where we have like a really tight alignment so that we're both working towards the same goal there.
Interesting, yeah. So on the one hand, you do have some, I'd say, let's call them traditional roles. You talked about the SEO role being very focused on whatever's driving revenues closest to revenue. And I think specifically in your case, I really love the Crash the Party where you, I think the whole competitor traffic volume is quite high because there's just a lot of, I think, up and coming tools also. And just like being able to really go into all of these different searches and dominating not just your own competition searches, but also the ones from competitors, super interesting. And especially for like super red ocean type markets, definitely an interesting tactic, I feel like. Do you see a lot of success with that? Just like crashing the party, like getting traffic from like Zoom Info versus Apollo type search terms?
We're super lucky that like the majority of our like demand capture actually comes from competitor bidding and also like in SEO, like competitive keywords. It's just, it's such a competitive space that there's a huge amount. And it's such like a built out, we don't have too much product education. And I think that comes back to it being about B2B, just getting B2B data. It's like, it's like kind of simple. So there's a lot of like, lots of like, ways to go about it, loads of like demand to capture. So yeah, we do see a lot of success in that. That would be like the bulk of the demand we capture is based on different ways of going after competitors.
Is that how much percentage would that be? What do you think?
I think if we, so from a Google Ads perspective, I know it's over 50%.
Oh, crazy.
Like, so we actually do less. Like you can spend so much on competitors that we probably do less of like the generic keywords that like other companies would do.
And how's conversion rate like down funnel? How is that behaving?
Depends on the competitor as well. So like for example, we get way better fit with like Zoom Info than we do with maybe Lucia or something. And it's all about price point and then like the type of customers that each like competitor would attract. So then we would obviously, we like work, like for example, from a Google Ads perspective, you weight bids then higher towards like getting the Zoom Info customers than we do towards Lusher, even though we want to appear everywhere.
Yeah, cool, interesting. And then I think paid and organic also needs to have a good alignment on those, like what are most relevant competitors right now, etc.
Yes.
Right? So I assume you're generally speaking, you're also thinking in terms of a revenue organization, really trying to have close communication lines in between departments, which seems to be also one of the requirements in order to run, like, I think what you called, I like the term, like the media machine and the easy framework. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit deeper, because I think these are concepts that are not very popular, not like the standard in a lot of organizations.
So the what we call the media machine is based out of this idea that every company needs to create its own, like every company needs to become its own media company, like Dave Gerhart says. And and so what we call the media machine, I suppose, is really our demand, our content demand creation efforts that mean that we're like creating content that will create demand. The reason why you do all of these demand creation efforts is because it lowers your cost of capturing demand later on and increases the amount of demand you can capture. And like essentially we set out, I suppose, for the media machine and all this, what we call the Easy Mode content framework, which basically builds out a framework, which means that we have a strategic narrative that for each persona that we want to aim to talk to the point of, which is like we say that B2B buying behavior has changed. And then we have for marketers, sales and RevOps, different topics that feed into that overall narrative. And then that's how we sort of like fuel and run the content that we then put out. So we go and look for podcast guests that can talk to those points, like for each of those personas. We have a podcast for each persona. We do the same on live shows. We make those of like the talking points or maybe the theme around some of those things. And do the same for newsletters too.
Yeah. For me, it's very interesting and also very interesting because it seems like there's a lot of effort that is needed to like come up with new content all the time, yeah. Right? I think that's what a lot of people struggle with, like every day scratching their head, like, okay, mm-hmm. What's the next webinar? What's the next podcast? Do you have like a blueprint approach? Do you just put on every single persona and you're like, okay, we always need a podcast, always need a number of long form written content, mm-hmm. always need these kinds of things? Or is it very individual and based on research for each person?
Exactly. And we wouldn't just start off doing one of each, basically. Like, for example, let's sort of build it out. So like the RevOps persona is probably the one that we've taken the, like, it's most recent. And we've like slowly built out again the different assets for that. I think like you've got to think about the amount of resource you've got on each thing. So I think, and also like the host you get. So we found like a really cool host to host the RevOps podcast, and then he's able to get cool guests on, and then that gave that, and then that started to build quite quickly. So we focused on that, and we haven't then gone and done a newsletter. You can also look at, like, we test it constantly. It's like in sales, we were like finding that, you know, a lot of like the sales persona didn't really read newsletters, so then we're trying to think about other ways that we could actually spend our time rather than writing a newsletter that they don't read. So whereas they love like doing like the live shows and like cold calling lives that we do with Morgan Ingram. So I don't think it has to be formulaic that you have to be like, oh, do these three things all the time. You kind of like have to test it with your own personas and like, and also yeah. just turn up where they're at. So it's like, if they like listening to podcasts, then great, make a podcast, but it's not going to be like the savior of, you know, it's not going to be like, there's so many podcasts that die, right? Yeah. And they don't create demand. And like, so
true.
You have to work at all of this stuff and yeah. make sure that people are actually interested in it.
Cool. So no silver bullets in content marketing, just like in marketing in general. I think this is a common theme. but a podcast seems to be a cornerstone. Are there any other things? I mean, at some point you do want to revert back to whatever experience is showing to kind of work, right?
Right.
What are some maybe insights you can share there? Maybe something that surprised you and making that media machine work, but then also keeping it up.
Yeah. Something that surprised me. That's interesting. Trying to think if I've got a good example there. We have surprises, I suppose, we bought another company called Casper, who run like a PLG motion for a very similar product to Cognizant, but it's really for more for individual contributors. And we launched a podcast in Spain there for like the Spanish audience around like a sales podcast. And that did really well, but more specifically the podcast did really well, the YouTube like recordings and the YouTube, like we record all of the record it every time, and we do it in person kind of like this, and that the YouTube side is done better than the podcast side in itself, and that just shows that it's like the content changes per like persona and also market. It's like maybe we've cracked something that there's not, we're actually one of the first talking, like doing a sales podcast in Spain, and we've been able to really capitalize on that. So I think you can find out a lot just by testing and doing, and you have to do to find this stuff out. Whereas like maybe in the UK and the US, like it's saturated with marketing and sales podcasts, to be honest. So it takes a lot to sort of like stand out as well. But I think the quality of your guests and also the quality of your guests and your actual hosts as well make a big difference to, in my opinion.
Yeah, that for sure makes all the difference. Yeah, I think in the end, because demand creation is sometimes I feel like people talk about it like it's a set of tactics, and then it's you kind of just need to execute them, and then you create demand out of like thin air. But in the end, it's really about the perception someone has when being exposed to that media, mm-hmm. right? is that like something that actually changes a little bit on maybe a viewpoint on something they struggle with? Like those are the moments you're looking for.
Yeah.
All of the metrics in terms of has a person watched the video is kind of like it's a blanket KPI, right? You kind of like need something quantitative there, but it will never tell the full story.
Right. And I think the media machine element, right, is that you do more than just a podcast. So the point, I suppose, with the YouTube part in the with that Casper podcast is we actually created a podcast that we put on podcast platforms. We put the videos on YouTube, and actually we created the bigger audience on YouTube. And I think that's where people talk about creating snippets and then they put it on LinkedIn. You actually end up building different audiences on multiple platforms. So you'll have a group of people that listen to your podcast in the full length of it. Then you'll have a group of people who might listen to their podcast as well, but that some of them will only would watch the snippets you put on LinkedIn, and there'll still be an audience to the content. And you get this with people who run more B2C podcasts, and then they put lots of short form snippets on like TikTok and things, and they'll have another whole audience there who just watched who just watched the podcast there. And I think all of that scales, and to me that's all what this sort of media machine is, that you've got to try and be everywhere for where your ICP turned up.
Yeah, and also find the right ways and right formats and right approaches and editing styles, maybe even like it goes deep, right?
Right.
So that's then feeding, I guess, also your distribution over paid media, etc. And I think one thing that's quite interesting about Cognizant is since you talked about it in the beginning, is I think you were one of the, in Europe anyway, one of the first companies adopting that kind of style of doing marketing and like doing ungated and like value driven marketing. And I wonder though, now that you have it up and running and you said you scaled inbound, maybe you can just give a quick impression how those numbers also change from inbound. What are some specific challenges you have now at the scale we're already at? Because just to give a little bit more context, I think for a lot of people, they're still in the state of trying to get where you already are, but then what are the challenges that come next? Because I'm sure it's not always easy sailing only because you have a little bit of a different organization, only because you have already a little bit of a mindset shift.
Yeah, so we scaled the inbound function to the fact that we create about 55 to 60% of all revenue comes from inbound, and the remaining is outbound. And then for our SMB segment, that's 100% owned by the inbound marketing function. So we have reps that are completely, entirely fed by all of the inbound demand that we create. So we're fully responsible for their pipeline. I think the next level of it, And we got to that point, I think, and this is true for anyone who starts this, what will happen is, I remember Refine Lab saying it, and it's like, you kind of believe this stuff, but you're like, oh, is that the case? But you start this type of marketing and you see a dip to begin with before you see it hockey stick and all the demand comes back out. And we saw a big hockey stick in MQLs and pipeline, but eventually that obviously stabilizes again, and you need to find efficiencies in your budget and your program. And I think that's the hard bit once you get into it. You also need to know how to report back consistently to senior leadership on what you're doing. And I feel the education process of the model that you're running never stops internally. And there'll be new people who join the organization, new heads of and VPs of sales, new people in like other partner organizations that like are really important, like finance, and you need to constantly be able to explain the program that you're running and how you're finding efficiencies in it, because we know that it's like a lot harder than being able than lead gen, where you can maybe like pin all your efforts on a cost per lead and really demonstrate that like cost per lead maybe is important, but with running the like a demand generation model, but like there's other factors as well at play, and you don't want to be over optimizing to that metric. So you have to like know your numbers and know how to like demonstrate that as well. So I think that's like the challenge, and finding efficiencies is hard. I think that bit is is really hard at the moment. Everyone's sort of looking for them. and I think, yeah, true. That bit is probably the difficult bit going forward.
How are you doing it? Like when senior leadership just comes up and it's like, Liam, demand creation's got to be more efficient. Like,
yeah.
Where do you start?
There are some things that I just would not show, to be honest. we'd pull reports and we look at like where, so from the top level, we would look at all of the campaign lines, all of the channels, and we'll look at pipeline and revenue that come from them. Now, obviously, when you do that, it's heavily weighted to Google and to Bing and like the demand capture channels. That stuff I would not share with finance, like in its raw state, because it looks obvious. It just says, well, axe LinkedIn, axe your spend there, axe your spend on Facebook, and let's just double down on Google Ads. Now, we all know that if you do that, then like, it's not going to work. Like that's just capturing the 5% that's in market, and you'll end up actually spending more money and it'll be super inefficient. But like, that's how the data looks. But we still like to look at it at that level because we're trying to map trends. So I think this is the really important thing. You have to look at everything. If LinkedIn, I can directly attribute X amount of pipeline to it. If over the year that's declining, then no matter what I'm doing in my performance metrics in channel, something's still going wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's all this unattributed. We still want to see that there's that revenue growth from that channel is stable or growing and doing well. And if we can make it grow, then obviously we're making some good changes within it. But I just don't ever expect it to be a bulk winner because I know that there's so much else going on. Mm-hmm. I also will be looking at those trends in conjunctions with other things. So it's like maybe LinkedIn revenue is like where we're seeing that pipeline grow, and we're also seeing the pipeline grow in Google and the revenue growth from that. So I can understand that link between the activity on LinkedIn is impacting what we're capturing on Google. So we have that. That's the top line level that we're always looking at. Mm. And then we would retranslate that, I suppose, to finance to try and show where we have opportunity areas. Because that's actually what they want to know. They want to know, how are you going to create more? So we can be like, these are our... We'll look at those reports ourselves and then go back to them with our opportunity areas and why, mm-hmm. And where we're going to place our bets to get more efficiency. And that's kind of what they're interested in.
So it's less about like having this one North Star metric. I suppose you still have like more important metrics than others.
Yeah.
But it's less about like this one thing and increasing or decreasing it. But it's more of painting a story and a picture, mm-hmm. a complete picture of all the things going on.
Yeah.
Which is... I know from experience myself, it is always a challenge, right? Because how do you keep up with not just like channels ramping up or down top level, but then also within the channels, there's different times, might be different quality ads, might be different quality content out there, might be mm-hmm. having different impact. And then it's very hard to measure like the exact delays of like different types of content. So what does the documentation and learning process for Cognizm look like in order so you can actually like make sure you can connect these dots in a very complex environment?
Yeah, that is the hard bit. And there's like, we've probably gone sometimes too into the weeds on some stuff. We've probably over-optimized and concerned about engagement metrics on demand creation campaigns, which we then think we'll have like a try that we try and then link back to like the revenue metrics that we then get. So I think that bit's like really difficult, I think, but you have to kind of like, do it all, and you kind of build out connections where you can. So we like maybe will we know that like good, we create benchmarks, right, so that we know what's good for each of our campaigns, and we'll have like them automatically updating over like those benchmarks updating live as we're running those campaigns, so we know like for different metrics what good looks like, and we can start from looking at those metrics, start to predict like, okay, when we have engagement rate at this level, frequency at this level, we can predict this level of like MQL output from that. And then we know that an SMB MQL becomes a squo in X amount of like weeks, and like we can, mm-hmm. you can work back and try and figure some of this stuff out. And it's never like an exact science, but once you've got a little bit of knowledge around it, you can start to optimize those things.
Is it more though you relying on like individual contributors than kind of knowing what to look out for and reporting it to you,
right,
and then you just connecting the dots? Or is there like also like a, let's say, some people just work with like a long notion of like, we did on April 20th, we did like, I don't know, start this one content program, and then trying to kind of keep up like that and kind of like cross track these things.
So we have an audit process that the paid team go through where they like, yeah, they run and know to like that, to the granular detail of like these benchmarks. We also have like a testing process where we have intermittent testing, so we can like switch things on and off, try different things for a few weeks and see the outcomes. And they run all of that. From my perspective, I wanted to see the top level all the time. I can't get into the detail, but yeah, there are individual contributors who, and that, I suppose, that all comes top down, but they're still tied to the revenue numbers. So they know that the changes that they're making, and they know that the impact that that's going to have. And
so everyone's aligned on the revenue numbers.
Exactly. We have to be aligned on that OKR. Otherwise, what happens is people start optimizing at the bottom level without kind of like thinking too much about the bigger picture. And you can steer off in the wrong direction. So it's a big team effort and change and chain of command to get to that big output. And at the end of the day, we're tracking lots of different metrics. So we have like a dashboard that will just like, from a top level perspective, covering the most important things like our cost per lead, cost per square, stuff like this. Our like revenue number, pipeline number, and we'll have that flashing red or green depending on where we are against target. So then if there's any issues, I can go into that, then go to the team and they can drill down on it, and we can see if what like changes or things we can test to try and like impact that number. There's no silver bullet. Like, I think everyone wants there to be one metric that you can track, but it's just not the case. It's not how it works.
Yeah, it's just not how buying software works also, right? So you kind of want to map the journey on a metric, but that's just like a trying to map like a very complex scenario on like a very singular kind of thing.
Right.
Doesn't really work out. What I find interesting is you do have an experimentation process, and you talk about trying to make a science out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like especially with demand creation after a certain scale and then having to find those efficiencies, on the one hand, it's for me, it feels like definitely you do want it to be like metric based and performance based. Like when you get a question like, oh, we need to gain some efficiencies, like you need to make a decision what to turn off, you do want to make it on metric based and performance based. But in the end, and that's what I found interesting, it's also usually a part of it is a gut decision, I feel like, and also like intuition, like marketing intuition. Mm-hmm. I found it very interesting because I think the whole marketing space is aspiring so much to be a scientist, when in the end the very doing of what we do is not allowing us to have those exact rigorous processes sometimes that a scientist would require. And also like having a clear outcome we are steering towards is also like very unscientific, I feel like. So what's your take on this?
I think we like to try and, you want to try and like have a scientific like testing ways of measuring and testing as you say. But I think at the end of the day, quite often they become quite blunt, and I think the actual blunter the better sometimes. So I think just taking hard and fast, turn this, don't do this, do this, turn this off, do that, and testing like that is your better way. Like, I think when you start making lots of tiny little changes, and like you said, you're just looking for an outcome that you want. It's not like you're going unbiased.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens. Yeah. You want an outcome, like
controlled environment.
You can end up being like fulfilling your own prophecy, and like all the small changes over time compound, and they can have actually a really negative impact.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes your best measure, your best tool, is to make blunt, big changes where you can like make real clear decisions from it. I like the idea of marketers talking about themselves as scientists, but there's a huge art to it as well. And like, you know that you have to rely a little bit on your gut. There's a huge creative element that has a massive impact that you can't, that's hard to quantify just using performance metrics as well. So I think all of that has to come into account.
Yeah, so it's a blend, right? You cannot ignore the one part too much, cannot ignore the other part too much. Like, you just kind of have to accept it as a duality or whatever you think of it, maybe even more parts involved there. I think like we could also talk forever about this, but what I found really interesting is this concept of the further you go down the rabbit hole of demand creation, and then also seeing the impacts, the more loose you also have to be in the optimization measures, like turning entire campaigns off for months, looking like what's the impact on that specific ICP would be one of those very concrete action steps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even the whole channel you could think about. I think we talked about it. And then just making sure you don't over-index also and overly fall in love with demand creation to the point where I think especially like tools, like attribution tools tend to do that, where they're like, oh, there was an engagement on an ad and that's why all the revenue is attributed to that ad or to that channel. That's also wrong, of course, because then while the Google Ads touchpoint is not the whole story, the LinkedIn touchpoint is also not the whole story, right? So just kind of like balancing that out and not going like almost overcompensating now in the other direction of saying engagement is the holy grail. I think that's quite important to have a lookout for, which I'm sure CFO and like general senior leadership will ensure anyway that this doesn't happen too much, right?
For sure. No, and I think everyone just wants to find an easy way of measuring stuff and like, and just wants to be able to find, like, they want to know what's bringing me revenue, what gets me to my goals, and anything that's, unfortunately, anything that's like simplifying something down to that basis is not going to be the right answer. It can be part of the picture, which is great, like, and having impression level revenue attribution like on an ad can be really useful amongst all your other metrics, but like you said, it's oversimplifying how people purchase, so it's not going to be the answer on its own, unfortunately. And it just has to be that little bit of a reminder to ourselves that we need to take everything into account, and that, to be honest, is being more like a scientist, so and thinking about all the factors that are at play.
True. Yeah, it does require a certain mindset.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice. I think we covered quite some ground now in what it means to run a media machine and a well-running demand creation project and what comes with it. Also, I think one important point was just like the stakeholder part of it. Like buy-in is not like a one-stop thing, but like rather like a continuous process of always making sure to re-educate also senior leadership in this case. So very interesting conversation. Thank you so much for being part of this, Liam, and thanks for being here in Hamburg as well. Looking very much forward for the next visit. And anything else you want to say? Maybe pitch Cognizant real quick.
No, thanks so much for having me though, and it's been great, and great to chat as well. Check Cognizant out if you want. It won't disappoint.
Get the diamond data, guys.
Yeah. It's diamond data time, guys.
Awesome. See you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.